There's so many guys that played well out there. They certainly are going to make it tough on us in terms of making a decision. But when you have a defensive effort like that and you look at the special teams, got you the field position. Jake Rudock did a nice job. You know, Orlovsky did a nice job when he was in there. The guys across the board played pretty well.
We're all confident because we know what we've done. Even in the preseason, you know, we've been a big play offense. We've hit those. We just got to be more consistent and sustain drives. And, you know, it was good for us to capitalize on our special teams unit, getting us a turnover there. So I think all the guys know, you know, when the real bullets are flying in the regular season, that's when it counts. We've taken this approach in the preseason to try to work out some of the kinks and do some different things. And now we'll be able to focus in on what we do the best.
To take care of the football, you know, we got to do a great job of maintaining our possessions and possessing the ball. We got to tackle really well on defense, and then the final thing is we have to play harder than they do. We got to come out with a spirited approach, and you know, we got to match their intensity. They'll feed off their crowd, and they'll feed off being in the home team, you know, just like we would at home. But we got to match their effort, match their intensity, and you know, from there we'll see how it ends up.
We are the reigning Big Ten champions, and we need to defend that. I think every opening game has got to have great attention to detail, got to play with enthusiasm, got to play with great effort, get a chance to see where everybody's at, young players, older players. And so it's an exciting opportunity for everybody to move forward.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Can you believe that college football is finally back? Can you believe that we are already in week number 2 of high school football? It's a Football Friday! Right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks so much for being a part of the show today. We got a lot of really good stuff to talk about. Coming up last night, the controversy over Colin Kaepernick continues, as he decides to make a different gesture to the national anthem and the flag last night instead of a seated one. I don't know if he figures one knee is better. One knee is better than sitting, but not all the way good, up to standing up, and that's going to salve some wounds. I don't know what exactly he's thinking, but he got an earful yesterday from the San Diego fans, I can tell you that, on military salute nights. We'll get into that a little bit. Dude at Louisville is just throwing touchdowns like they're free. Really fun way to start the college football season. We got real starts to the college season locally for a couple of the teams that we follow closely, including the Toledo Rockets going at it tonight, as well as Michigan State. It's funny, Jim Cushlin, you and I talked about it. We've done previews of all of the teams that we kind of call ours, if you will, from Toledo and Bowling Green. We've done little previews to Ohio State and Michigan and Notre Dame. The only one we really left out is Michigan State, and you made jingled some phone lines yesterday and said, oh, by the way, they start their season tomorrow night.
Yeah,
and they do tonight against Furman. Go ahead.
Yeah, I completely didn't realize that because, you know, sometimes the schedule for college football likes to throw you that curveball for Labor Day weekend. You get some games Thursday. I'll be honest. I flipped through a couple of useless games at about 9:30 because I figured, what the heck? Then there'll be various more on tonight, a whole bunch on Saturday, of course. Then you got the Notre Dame play Sunday, by the way. Which is odd. Yeah, that game down in Texas. And then there's one game, courtesy of ESPN Radio, our friends there we'll have for you on Monday evening, Labor Day, involving Florida State. So, yeah, we are here, and I didn't even fully realize Michigan State played on Friday.
I knew earlier in the week
from talking with Coach Candle that, oh, that's right, yeah, Rockets on the road Friday. Didn't even realize Michigan State was, so luckily I was able to snag somebody on game day, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, kind of weird the way they start them out on all these different days, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, they're trying to own every day of the week or late weekend and maybe even into the early part of next week. Eventually, when Maction starts up and you're on Tuesdays or Wednesdays or whatever, I mean, honestly, college football pretty much every day of the week. So
not just college. If you're really a football nut, once Maction starts and you get those Tuesday, Wednesday games, it means there is some kind of nationally televised NFL or college game 7 days a week.
All right. There you go. How about that? So you really are going to have either pro or college football 7 days a week, and it starts really, it started yesterday, and it continues tonight. As you mentioned, Toledo and Arkansas State, Michigan State has Furman at home, not really expecting too much of a battle there for Sparty, but we want to talk about it. So here's what we've got coming up on the extravaganza today. Kyle Austin, who covers Sparty for MLive.com, will join us to talk about that matchup, not necessarily just the matchup, but a bit of a season preview for Michigan State. At 3:35, however, which is a lot closer, it's 20 minutes away or so, we're going to talk to Bill Clark, who, of course, is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and in Southeast Michigan, and he is going to talk to us about Central Catholic and St. Francis of New York. What a start to the season last week for Central Catholic, defeating a defending state champion at the Division IV level in Columbus Bishop Hartley in a game that really probably could have been and should have been a playoff game. Week number one, a come-from-behind win, 31-28. So Bill Clark will have all of that for us previewing. I have no idea, as I'm sure nobody except for Bill Clark, who studies this stuff, about St. Francis from New York. But if they're playing teams from out of state like we are or like Central Catholic is, and we see some Ohio teams do, it's usually the bigger and better teams that do that. So you can assume it's going to be a challenge. At least that's my assumption. We'll see from Bill Clark. So we got a high school football guest coming up at 3:35. We got the college story at 4:05. And we're going to kick off with the NFL story right now. And by the way, if you're wondering about baseball, Jim and I were pointing this out to one another. There were no baseball games of note yesterday. The Indians finally got a day off after just going at it.
They only have one more the rest of the season, do the Indians.
And it seems like they've only had one in the last 3 weeks.
That's and that's pretty much true. They did. They were supposed to have one a couple of homestands ago, but they had to put that makeup game against Boston.
The Red Sox.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally, you know, they call it a day-to-day grind or daily grind. It is a daily grind, literally, at this stage of the season for a lot of clubs. And the Indians have been in that boat. I think the Tigers have had a little more time down.
They have, because they didn't have to throw in a random mid-August on one of our off days kind of rain out. In fact, looking at the Tigers, they have, in addition to yesterday, they have next Thursday off, and I think they have one more after that, but I'll have to double-check on that.
So the AL Central race, obviously, in the home stretch now that we are on the second afternoon of September. We will watch very closely and see where that goes. But we don't have any news on the baseball front today. So we are going to kind of stick with the NFL. And obviously, the biggest story last night, Colin Kaepernick going at it yet again, deciding this time to kneel on one knee while the national anthem was played rather than sit. But that is not good enough. Not good enough for a lot of people, myself included, because of what we are supposed to do when we hear the national anthem. And I bring that up very, very carefully, because when I say supposed to, what I mean is we really do have an obligation, but not one that is going to be enforced by fines or by imprisonment. But truly, it actually is in the U.S. Code. It's a law that says we are supposed to, but they're not going to enforce it as a law, but we are supposed to stand at attention for the national anthem. U.S. Code, I read this because I really wanted to see what we're supposed to do. U.S. Code, and this is Title 36, Subtitle 1, Part A, Chapter 3, Subsection 301. A designation, the composition consisting of the words and music known as the Star-Spangled Banner, is the national anthem. B, conduct during playing. During a rendition of the national anthem, when the flag is displayed, A, individuals in uniform should give the military salute at the first note of the anthem and maintain that position until the last note. B, members of the armed forces and veterans who are present but not in uniform may render military salute in the manner provided for individuals in uniform. And C, all other persons present, and this would include Colin Kaepernick and every fan, player, official, usher, concessionaire, you know, doorman, whatever your job is, all others present should face the flag and stand at attention with their right hand over their heart, and men not in uniform, if applicable, should remove their headdress with their right hand and hold it at the left shoulder with the hand being over the heart. And two, when the flag is not displayed, all present should face toward the music of the anthem and act in the same manner they would if the flag were displayed. So that's what it says in the U.S. Code. Now, it is not enforced. It is just a recommendation slash suggestion. Maybe suggestion is weaker, too weak. But it is what we're supposed to do. It's just that they're not going to lock you up if you don't do it because of freedom of speech and freedom of expression. So the knee doesn't make it any better. It really doesn't. What is unique about last night's Colin Kaepernick latest news, not just the boos that he got, and they rained them down on him there in San Diego yesterday, not just the boos, what's unique is that he had a partner. He had a teammate who knelt beside him in solidarity, and shockingly, maybe not shockingly, but interestingly, he had another brother-in-arms, if you will, somebody who was going to go ahead and echo his move from another city. A Seattle Seahawk decided to sit or kneel or whatever it was that he did in solidarity with and support of Colin Kaepernick. Now, that's very interesting because now that we're up to three players, two with the 49ers and one with a different team, what do you suppose is going to happen on opening day 9/11? Are we going to see half of the rosters trying to say, yeah, I agree, and it's starting to gain steam, and half of them kneeling down on the day when the NFL season opens on the 15th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks that killed 3,000 Americans? A day in which the flag is displayed so proudly as a symbol of national pride and solidarity with the victims on that day, are we going to see half of the rosters down and half of the rosters up? Because if there is no action taken by the commissioner of the National Football League to address this, and he is sitting there, it seems like, peeing his pants, scared to death to take a stand and make a statement about this. He's scared to death. Roger Goodell is just a flat coward because he will not do anything. You know, there's a response to all of this, and I don't know if I read this yesterday before we got out or not, but there's a response to all of this from, this response is from the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations, Bill Johnson. And Jim, I don't know if I read this yesterday or not.
No, I don't think you did.
This is in reference not just to Kaepernick and his kneeling or sitting during the anthem, but also the pig socks that he wore to practice, which was found out. I know I talked about that, which was kind of discovered. Nobody really caught it from earlier in training camp. Nobody really, you know, understood anything about it. But now that we know how he feels about police officers, people are going back and looking at these pictures of him wearing socks with pictures of pigs in police hats on them. And now people understand what he thinks about cops. And Bill Johnson, the executive director of the National Association of Police Organizations, saw the picture, saw these protests, and said, it is ridiculous that the same league that prohibits the Dallas Cowboys Football Club, and this is big, from honoring slain officers in their own community with their uniforms. Remember what Dallas wanted to do? A little tiny decal in the back of the helmet, somewhere near the flag that's on the back of every helmet. And by the way, will Colin Kaepernick display that flag on the back of his helmet when the season starts? That's an interesting question. But the Cowboys wanted to add a little decal there honoring five dead police officers in Dallas, the deadliest day in the history of this country on one day for police officers after 9/11. So second deadliest. But the NFL, Roger Goodell, Captain Oblivious, not obvious, Captain Oblivious, said, no, you can't do that. As the director says, he refused to let the Dallas Football Club honor the slain officers in their community with their uniforms, but he stands silent when Kaepernick is dishonoring police officers with what he's wearing on the field. I think the league is in a downward spiral regarding their obligations to the public under Roger Goodell, and this is another example of that. Now, he wasn't the only one. And look, battle lines are being drawn. Make no mistake about it. Battle lines are being drawn throughout the NFL. There are current players who support what Kaepernick is doing. There are current players who absolutely abhor what Kaepernick is doing. There are former players weighing in on both sides of this as well. One former player who has been perhaps a little more outspoken than others is Boomer Esiason. And Kush, I don't know if you heard what Boomer Esiason had to say about all this, but it's just about as strong a statement as anybody can make, well, other than me, because I don't know if anybody has been as hard on it as I am. Now, the difference being I'm, nobody in Toledo, Ohio. Boomer Esiason is a national name for his career in the National Football League and for his national presence as a football analyst with CBS. So Boomer gets the prize here for saying what needs to be said. and I quote, he said this to Bob Glauber of Newsday, quote, I cannot say it in the strongest, most direct way. It's an embarrassment, and it's about as disrespectful as any athlete has ever been. And I don't care what his cause is. The NFL football field is not a place for somebody to further their political ambitions. Can you imagine if a player went out on the field with a Make America Great Again hat and let's vote for Donald Trump? It's the same thing, Boomer Esiason said. And let me pause in his commentary there to say he's spot on. Can you imagine what Roger Goodell would do if he made a political statement like that? If he made a political statement in support of Donald Trump, somebody that has wrongly been painted and cast as some kind of a bigot or a racist, can you imagine if somebody had done that? It would be over for that guy. Roger Goodell would have jumped on it in 0.5 seconds. But we are now 1 week into the Kaepernick story. Goodell remains silent because it was 1 week ago today, last Friday, when he sat during the anthem against Green Bay in preseason game number 3. So he did it again last night with the kneel, and more from Boomer Esiason. He, meaning Kaepernick, he is severely underinformed. And I kind of spelled that out on this program. I think it was Tuesday when I read through just a litany of statistics proving everything that Colin Kaepernick has said is wrong. He has a right to say it, but we have a right to correct him and inform the public as much as we can possibly do with our own reach, no matter how limited nor vast it might be. We have a right and a responsibility to present the correct information. His argument about people of color being targeted by police officers is flat out wrong. That's just period, point blank. There's no second opinion there. The stats are the stats. The facts are the facts. Boomer Esiason likes facts. He said he is severely underinformed, and I welcome him to go ride in a cop car and take numerous 911 calls, going into places where guns and violence are everyday occurrences, Esiason said. Put on that blue uniform and put the shield on and see what it's like to put your life in harm's way every single day. Then get back to me when you're making $35,000 or $40,000 a year, as opposed to the $11 million he's making. End quote. I heard that, or I read that anyway, and I got to tell you, the first thing that came into my mind was this.
And you dig it!
Because it's like, in all seriousness, it's like, it's as if Boomer Esiason was listening to my show and reading my Twitter timeline. Because I tweeted the very same thing, like Monday, you know, whenever this thing broke over last weekend. I said, perhaps it's time for Colin Kaepernick. It was retweeted about, I don't know, 1,500 times. And I don't even have that big of a Twitter reach. But I think I was like 1,500 times that got retweeted when I said that perhaps Colin Kaepernick needs to go ahead and, if he really wants to look out for people being oppressed in America, maybe turn in that $114 million contract. Go take the test at the police academy, pick up the shield, pick up a gun, and go ahead and make a difference for people and teach us all how to do it. I'm obviously speaking in more than the 140 characters I was able to use in the tweet that was retweeted that often. But my message was, go show cops how to do it the right way then for $50,000 a year. So I gave him a little bump here. Esiason said 35 or 40. And the bottom line is, it just depends on what city you're working in. A cop starting out in Toledo probably is around $35,000. A cop starting out in New York is probably higher at maybe 60 or 70. Not that that's a great amount of money in a city where it costs 10 times more than it does to live there than it does in Toledo, Ohio. But the bottom line is, we kind of all had the same mindset there. Final round of quotes here from Boomer Esiason about Colin Kaepernick. It's an NFL field. And he's wearing an NFL uniform. At the end of the day, if he wants to do it in a news conference, if he wants to do it and talk about it at the ESPYs and talk about it at an event he's having, more power to him. Those are the places you should be doing it, like LeBron James is doing it and Carmelo Anthony is hoping to do it. End quote. So he is saying, keep this garbage off of the field. And oh, by the way, when you do this, make sure you get yourself some facts. Go on some ride-alongs. Go ahead and experience. I mentioned this, too, yesterday. I think it was yesterday on the program. when I talked about the letter that was sent by the police union chief in San Francisco, where Kaepernick plays. As a gesture to build communications, he wrote this letter to Jed York, the president of the Niners, and Roger Goodell, the AWOL commissioner of the league. As a gesture to build communication and understanding about the law enforcement profession, the Police Officers Association extends an open invitation to Mr. Kaepernick and to any player or employee from the National Football League to visit the SFPD Academy and partake in any of the simulations that recruits participate in during their training. This will hopefully expose them to a very small fraction of what officers experience daily on the streets of our city. That is an outstanding offer, and it's a suggestion that I wish Colin Kaepernick had the you-know-whats to take up. I have been in said police simulations. It's one of the reasons I feel as strongly as I do about these things, because I've covered these kinds of things for a long time, and I've been listening to the lies that demonize cops in our society for the last couple of years minimum. And I have actually been invited to participate in these use of force simulations, and I had to make the decision about when to pull my weapon and when not, when to take life and when not to. And I can tell you this, it is extraordinarily difficult to make that split decision in literally an eighth of a second. It is unbelievable how hard it is to decide, am I about to get shot or do I have to shoot him first? What is it that's behind his back? He won't show me his hands. Get up. And then as soon as he starts to pull them out front, What do I know? What is he going to do? What is he going to do? Is it a bag of drugs in his hands and he's pulling them out to show me it's only drugs? Do I wait to find that out? Do I wait till his hands get in front of him to see? Or do I pull the trigger now? Because if I'm wrong, I'm going to go into the books as cop that shoots unarmed African-American. Well, I didn't know if he was unarmed or not. He had his hands behind his back, and he wouldn't put them up. I don't want to die right now. I've been through these simulations. It is impossible to judge these people, these officers, when we sit in the comfort of our houses and we look down at our little phones at the latest viral video, and we judge what we would have done based upon hours of staring at that little screen and all kinds of hindsight, 20/20 second guessing to our credit and available at our disposal. And these guys have to make the decision in an eighth of a second. Doesn't work that way. And still, they get it right 99% of the time. Still, despite all of that. And I want to make one more comment on this, or actually not me, but I want to play one more comment on this. Jim, did we talk about Cam Newton at all yesterday?
No.
Cam Newton is a very, very interesting man. Cam Newton is something else, boy. I'll tell you what. Cam Newton is just my oh my. Last year, Cam Newton kind of caused a little bit of controversy along racial lines himself. You remember this. What is Cam Newton as a quarterback? He's extraordinarily flamboyant, right? He's the guy that when he scores touchdown, he's dabbing and he's dipping and he's dancing and he's doing his thing and he's doing the Superman thing. And what does that do to a lot of people? It rubs them the wrong way. Why? Because we've never seen quarterbacks act like that before. Receivers do the showboating in the end zone. Quarterbacks fist bump or high five and then run back to the, you know, to the sideline, right? Cam is very flamboyant, drew a lot of criticism for that. Now, he also drew a lot of praise because after the dancing, he'd go give the football to a little kid, which we loved. I loved. Fantastic. But with the criticism that came with all of the dancing and this and that and the other for the league's MVP, he made a statement last year that lit some racial fires. He said, I'm a black quarterback that's doing things that nobody's ever seen before, and that scares them. Them presumably meaning white people, since he's a black guy. It lit some racial fires, and it bothered me. What did I say last year about this, Jim, on the show? I said, and I asked you, do you see Cam Newton black quarterback, or you just see Cam Newton quarterback? Cam Newton is a freak. Dude just is a tremendously talented player who earned the MVP. No problem with that whatsoever, but, I mean, we're in 2016. I'm not looking at him and saying black quarterback any more than I'm looking at, I don't know, at Rob Gronkowski or something and saying great white receiver or white tight end. You know, I mean, it's just dude's a player. So I was kind of bothered by that, and I thought, man, Cam's got to let go of this race thing, right? Well, now that Colin Kaepernick happens, guess who speaks up? Cam Newton. And guess what Cam Newton did? Cam Newton did us all a favor. Cam Newton tried to do the opposite, the direct opposite of what Colin Kaepernick is doing. Cam Newton tried to bring people together. While Colin Kaepernick tries to divide people along racial lines, saying black people and people of color are being treated unfairly in this country, which is advancing this battle between white privilege and white guilt and black oppression and police picking on blacks and so on and so forth, while he tried to draw the difference between the races and to divide us all, it was Cam Newton who tried to bring everybody together. I want you to listen to these profound words of wisdom by Cameron Newton, the NFL's reigning most valuable player.
Who am I to say that it's wrong? Who am I to say that it's right? Either or is still personal. What I can't, you know, fathom is how does 1/8 of an inch, something so small, be the difference in such a big commodity in our whole lifetime? And that's the thickness of our skin. 1/8 of an inch. And under that, we're all the same color.
Wow. Tell me that guy should not be leading the discussions that are going on in this country about that sort of thing. 1/8 of an inch, the thickness of our skin, thickness of my skin, thickness of Cam Newton's skin, thickness of Colin Kaepernick's skin, thickness of Boomer Esiason's skin. Remove that 1/8 of an inch from us, and what do you see? Identical human beings. We are all the same color under that 1/8 inch. Cam Newton's bringing people together. Cam Newton is a unifier, whereas Colin Kaepernick is a divider. That is a message that I was hoping when I heard it yesterday, and when I followed Twitter all day and night last night. I was hoping people of both races, or let's say all races, counting in all the ethnicities, would embrace and say, wow, Cam, thank you. What you just said, so incredibly important. That's what I'm thinking. People are going to reject the divisiveness of Colin Kaepernick and embrace the unity of Cam Newton. But I guess that was too much to hope for. Because at least from a social media analysis standpoint, it turned out to be just the opposite. Cam Newton has been excoriated by so many in the black community for selling out. How dare you not stand with Colin and be down with the struggle and tell people how oppressed the people of color are? How dare you try to say that we're all the same? We're not all the same. We're not equal. Cam Newton was rejected. Colin Kaepernick was embraced, leaving all of us to wonder how, when, where will we ever find unity? When the MVP of the league, a strong, proud black quarterback named Cam Newton, can't call for unity and peace and togetherness and we are all the same, we should not be judged by that 1/8 of an inch of skin color. Let's look at us all as human beings. When he can't get universal support for that, then my friends, I've got great, great fear that nothing is ever going to change. Cam Newton has my respect. I sure as hell hope he gets it from more people. It's 3:36. I'll get off the soapbox for a little while, talk some high school football with you. Bill Clark joins us right on the other side of this Sports Center. And by the way, thank God for high school football tonight. Thank God for college football tonight. Toledo kicks off against Arkansas State. Thank God for Michigan State and Furman. And thank God we're just a week away from actual football to take our minds off all this garbage that we're getting from football players. The football season is here, and that's why we need to get ourselves to the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. The season is here, and you want to take advantage of savings. Right now, season opening savings are 10% store-wide and 75%, 50 to 75% on select items for doorbuster savings at the Buckeye Store and More. Hundreds of new Nike products in stock, including Ohio State products, Michigan, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Toledo, Bowling Green, Detroit Tigers. It's all there for you at Buckeye Store and More on 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, Starlight Plaza. Look for Big Brutus on the Roof. The store is right between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. You can't miss it. Look for the big inflatable Brutus on the roof at the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania, 5700 Monroe, Starlight Plaza, the College and Pro Superstore. Right back after this.
106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. As we continue, thanks so much for joining us on a free-for-all football Friday afternoon on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket Football Friday means high school, but tonight, of course, it means college football as well. Toledo in action against Arkansas State to start the season. Michigan State against Furman. We're going to talk college football here in about half an hour or so. But right now, we want to focus on the youngsters, the high school kids, as Bill Clark joins us once again for a preview of tonight's action. Bill, of course, is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio and in Southeast Michigan. Hey, Bill, how are you, my man?
I'm doing fine, Robert. How are you?
Fantastic. Was that a season opener or a playoff game last week?
When I'll tell you,
Central
people
Catholic
were saying,
and Columbus Bishop Hartley. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it turned out into quite a ball game, and a couple of people in the press box were saying, I don't know if we can take another 14 of these. but, you know, I'd be more than happy to ride along if they want to do another 14. But, it was a great game. The big studs for Central stepped up. Michael Warren went over the 5,000-yard mark in career rushes. Two rushing touchdowns. He caught the winning touchdown pass with 27 seconds to go. And then James Hudson had those two sacks back-to-back to shut down the offense when Hartley was trying to make the comeback with under 30 seconds to play. So big players make big plays at big times, and that's what Warren and Hudson did. And the other neat thing about the Central game last week was one of the things Greg Dempsey had told us in the pregame show last week, that, you know, they're very young, and so you have to keep the mistakes to a minimum. There were zero turnovers in that game for both teams, but for Central being so young, to start out with that kind of playing against the defending Division IV state champion and have their youngsters play with no turnovers was huge.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, yeah, boy, how big is that? You think about it. You expect the big plays from the big players. You know, Hudson is, he's a Michigan recruit, right?
Oh, yeah, he's on his way to the, he'll be maize and blue next year.
You know, and Michael Warren, obviously, his career thus far has spoken for himself, for itself. But you're right, you've got to mix the veterans, you know, the seniors, the stars, the All-State guys, and you got to mix them in with the younger guys making their first starts and hopefully minimize their mistakes. That's why it's so tough. You know, for a club even as good and with the tradition and the success as Central, to start out by testing themselves. And I know they started out last year 0-2-2, but you start out a season against somebody like a defending champion like Hartley, you don't have a lot of time to let these kids get their feet wet, the younger ones, and absorb their mistakes and come out with wins often. That's why it's so impressive to get that first one this past week.
Well, absolutely, and that's the way Greg Dempsey and his staff look at it. You know, they don't look for easy games in the preseason. A lot of coaches are doing that now because the computer points are so big. You don't just want to roll over somebody, you know, for the sake of rolling over them. It doesn't do anybody any good. So when you play a good team and you're able to win it, then you get a nice chunk of points. Obviously, Bishop Hartley's going to win a lot of games this year, so Central's going to get a lot of secondary points every time Hartley gets a win. So, yeah, that game last week was huge and a great confidence builder for the young kids, and now they just have to build on it tonight against a team that not everybody knows a whole lot about. About the only thing we know is that it's St. Francis. It's not the Knights. It's not right for the Irish Knight. They're the Red Raiders. They're from Buffalo, New York, about 6 miles south of Buffalo. And they've got 19 returning seniors. Their coach has been there. This will be his 29th year. They've got some impressive alumni that have graduated from the program. A couple guys went on to be general managers in the NFL. So they've got a little football tradition. They started in 1947 with their football. But as far as that goes, what kind of offense they run, what kind of defense they got to run, how good are their skill players, really don't know until we kick it off at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, Jim and I were just kind of kicking it around before. I said, I don't know thing one. I know now I know a lot more about them than I did, Red Raiders and everything else. But we don't know anything about them, but you just have to assume they're going to be a team full of studs. Generally speaking, weak teams don't have to go outside of their state to play. Generally, it's going to be stud teams like Central Catholic and, you know, a lot of the private schools that have to go and play one another in Pennsylvania and Michigan and New York, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they also have Walsh Jesuit on their schedule. That's the team that Whitmer played last week. They're going to go over to Walsh Jesuit later this year. But I will tell you that in 2004, this program was ranked number 22 in the state or in the 22 in the country by USA Today. Now, granted, that's 11 years ago, but they do have a pretty good football tradition. And the other thing to think about, too, is the fact that they are the state runner-ups in New York in their division from last year. So both Central and St. Francis tonight were runners-up in their divisions in the state tournament. So this is not a team.
Do you happen to know the division there, Bill?
Well, you know, according to Greg Dempsey, it would equate to Division II here in Ohio.
Okay. So good size.
So the nice thing about that is if Central can win tonight, that's another chunk of points that Central can tuck away. So
that was my next question. I didn't know if the computers took into account teams from other states. So what they equal, right?
Yeah, what they do is they take a look at the competition and who they play and the number of kids they have in the school, and then they equate that to what it would be if this team was playing in Ohio. And according to Coach Dempsey, he says he feels this team would probably be Division II, which is great because if Central, as I said, could pull off the win, that's going to be a nice chunk of points for them. This team was 7-5 last year, so I don't know how many quote-unquote secondary points Central will get as the season progresses for this team. But when you lose in the state championship game, obviously you've had in those seven wins, you must have done something right.
No question about it. Central Catholic and St. Francis of New York tonight, 6:30 pregame with Bill Clark, and that game, of course, right here on 106.5, The Ticket. All right, let's get into some other games. Of course, we always like to go over to our sister station, 100.7 The Zone, and talk about Perrysburg. They're at the Glass Bowl, the 6:30 pregame there as well against St. Francis. Let's talk about that one, Bill.
Yeah, I think Perrysburg is on a roll. I mean, it's going to be tough.
They said
earlier in the season, the track coaches voted Central number one, and most of them were saying, well, you know, if you're number one, you're going to stay number one until somebody beats you. Well, I think it's the same with Perrysburg. I mean, they're right now the best in the Northern Lakes League. St. Francis is still trying to find themselves. It's at the Glass Bowl, so, you know, St. Francis has a little bit of a home thing there, but Perrysburg is going to come loaded for bear. They've got some great skill position players, and as I said, St. Francis is still trying to find themselves. Scott Nisley is doing a nice job. It's just his second year, and he's moving the program forward, but I don't think they've got the horses to give Perrysburg much of a game tonight.
Yeah, and Perrysburg is on a roll. There's no doubt about it, and they continue to look good each and every week. Obviously, I'm looking back to last year, and they're off to a great start again. Let's talk about Whitmer, and you talked about their win last week over Walsh Jesuit. They've got Detroit Central Catholic. What can you tell us about Detroit, if anything?
Well, all I know is they're known as the Irish. I take that back. They're known as the Shamrocks. Central Catholic played them, I think, when Dane Sonsenbacher was a sophomore, so that was a few years back. But this team is very good. I think Whitmer is definitely did not take their time off in their non-league schedule. They loaded up for bear. So Whitmer will be tested tonight. But I think that the young Mr. Keller, who came off the bench last week as a quarterback, kind of showed himself. He's 14 years old, but his dad is a football guy at Whitmer, so he's got good roots. His uncle's played at Whitmer as well. And talking to some people around town, they think this kid is the real deal. So I think he'll be tested tonight because I think the Shamrocks are pretty good. And again, I think that's going to be kind of like a Division II game for Whitmer. I wouldn't swear to that, but I think it would equate over to Division II as far as the computer points go. I think, you know, Whitmer playing at home, I think that's huge, especially when you play a team from out of town. They've got to travel. They got to get their legs back, mm-hmm. et cetera, where you just have to go out and warm up. You're playing in front of your home fans. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Whitmer beat Detroit Catholic Central at all tonight.
Got our high school football preview show going here, or at least preview segment with Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
And by the way, Bill, glad you pointed that out because that crossed me up a couple of years ago. In Michigan, they're called Catholic Central, not Central Catholics.
Right.
It's really weird. You could easily flub that off the tongue. But I want to go to a couple of City League v. NLL matchups. You got Anthony Wayne, who clawed one out against Start, and then you also have Springfield at Bowser. I've looked at these kind of schools, especially Springfield, and we were just talking about Perrysburg a moment ago, Bill. These still feel like the biggest competitors to Perrysburg in that NLL. What do you see out of these couple of matchups against City League opponents tonight?
Well, I think you're going to have two great players as far as when Bowser and Springfield get together, because you've got studs on both sides of the ball. For Bowser, you've got Bryce Mitchell, who's I think he was might have been the City League Player of the Year last year, and then you got Brian Kobach, who is he just ran wild last week, over 260 rushing yards. He's the real deal. There's no doubt about it. So that should be an interesting game. It might be whoever has the ball last wins that game. Springfield likes to put points on the board, and Bowser has an opportunity to do that too. The young quarterback for Springfield, A.J. Gachardo, who's the coach's son, he stepped right in last week, and as Pat Gachardo, his grandfather, who was on our coach's show with us, he said, you know, when you put a young quarterback in a game like that, you just want to have him hold his own. He doesn't have to be the star. Of course, when you're handing the ball to Mr. Kobach, 45 times a night, that takes a little bit of the pressure off. But I think Springfield at home will win that game. And as far as Anthony Wayne, they're trying to figure out their quarterback situation. They've been using two or three different guys. It depends on the situation. And sometimes I think it's tough to do that, especially when you have young quarterbacks. And, of course, the new coach out there was the he was a assistant coach last year at Perrysburg. So he comes from a very good program. So Anthony Wayne's going to be ready to play. And I think obviously they made the playoffs last year. They're coming into their own. They're a very good City League team. That one could be a toss-up. The fact that Anthony Wayne is home will give them the nod since they're at home. But I think that game's a toss-up.
Well, it's 3:55, Kush. I think we got time for one more game preview here, and there's a lot to choose from. Why don't you go ahead and pick that last game?
All right, as I'm looking through, here's a game that jumped off at me, Bill, because over in the Northern Buckeye, and usually it's because we've seen what this team has done in recent years, blowing out a lot of guys in the regular season. They had their issues in the playoffs, and one of the teams they used to consistently blow out was Oak Harbor. I'm seeing in the pick-ems by a lot of guys, 50-50 kind of game between Oak Harbor and Genoa out in the Northern Buckeye. More than anything, that shows me how far the Comets have fallen in a couple years.
Yeah, the Comets are kind of up and down. I think Paul Patterson's doing a nice job with them. Of course, they were just the class of the NBC for so many years. But, yeah, they've kind of come back to the pack a little bit, and Oak Harbor is playing pretty well. So the Rockets could take off tonight, but the Comets could hold their own as well. So it's one of those deals where whoever makes the least amount of mistakes, and I know that's very cliche because normally, if you make the least amount of mistakes in any football game, you're probably going to win it. But I think whoever wins the turnover battle in that game could end up winning the game.
And while you got that Karnak hat on there, if you want to just get crystal balls. and I realize it's going to be more of a guess because you just don't know much about them other than their nickname, like you talked about, and their colors. But Central and St. Francis, and if you can, from Detroit Catholic Central and Whitmer, can you just kind of throw a dart in the air here and see where it lands?
Well, I think Central Catholic's playing well. I think the fact that the young kids got through their first test last week, A, no injuries, B, no turnovers, I think they're going to come in and they want to hold serve on their home field. So I think, Central's going to win that game, and, it just depends on how the offense works, but I think they could win it, 28-15 maybe. And then as far as, the other game you talked about,
Detroit Catholic.
Yeah, I think, Whitmer, if their offense gets going like it did last week, I think, they could win that game by 20, but I think if Catholic Central comes in and does what they can do, they could win by 20. So it's going to be a really good game, and it's going to come down to, you know, who plays better, and one of the deals could be who has the ball last as far as that Whitmer and Detroit Catholic Central game goes.
No question about it. Bill Clark, we'll hear his voice again. The pregame, 6:30 tonight right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, Central Catholic and St. Francis of New York, not the Knights. And, Bill, we'll look forward to the call. Thanks so much for the time, as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Have a good weekend.
You do the same. Thanks very much. And by the way, if you are interested in that Perrysburg and St. Francis game, the St. Francis DeSales game, of course, that is over on 100.7 The Zone, also a 6:30 pregame time. So, all right, we're going to get into college football next, coming up on the other side of the Sports Center here at the top of the hour. And very much looking forward to talking about Michigan State. We have not yet done so. We've done previews of all of the, well, just about all of the teams that we kind of pay attention to here, the Rockets, the Bowling Green Falcons, Michigan, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. So we got to get Michigan State in before they actually play. Otherwise, it's not a preview. Then it's a review after they beat up on Furman tonight. Kyle Austin of MLive.com will join us to, join us right after the top of the hour to preview Michigan State season, see if they're ranked too high or too low in the preseason. Jim, do you recall where they were in the AP? I want to say it was around maybe 12 or so. I know the coaches' poll was in
AP-wise, they were 12, yes.
12, yeah, there you go. So we'll see, is that a little too high, a little bit too low? Are they still little brother? Or have they beaten Michigan up enough now to say, hey, we're big brother, and it's Harbaugh that's got to come calling to us? So we'll talk a little bit about that as we continue. Hour number two of this Friday free-for-all edition of the Extravaganza coming your way right here on ESPN 106.5.
There's so many guys that played well out there. They certainly are going to make it tough on us in terms of making a decision. But when you have a defensive effort like that and you look at the special teams, you got you the field position. Jake Rudock did a nice job. You know, Orlowski did a nice job when he was in there. The guys across the board played pretty well.
We're all confident because we know what we've done. Even in the preseason, you know, we've been a big play offense. We've hit those. We just got to be more consistent and sustain drives. And, you know, it was good for us to capitalize on our special teams unit, getting us a turnover there. So I think all the guys know, you know, when the real bullets are flying in the regular season, that's when it counts. We've taken this approach in the preseason to try to work out some of the kinks and do some different things. And now we'll be able to focus in on what we do the best.
We got to take care of the football. You know, we got to do a great job of maintaining our possessions and possessing the ball. We got to tackle really well on defense. And then the final thing is we have to play harder than they do. We got to come out with a spirited approach, and you know, we got to match their intensity. They'll feed off their crowd, and they'll feed off being in the home team. And, you know, just like we would at home. But we got to match their effort, match their intensity, and you know, from there we'll see how it ends up.
We are the reigning Big Ten champions, and we need to defend that. I think every opening game's got to have great attention to detail, got to play with enthusiasm, got to play with great effort, get a chance to see where everybody's at, young players, older players, and so it's an exciting opportunity for everybody to move forward.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, yeah, 11 minutes after 4 hour number two is underway right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, thanks so much for being with us. It's a free-for-all Friday. It's also a football Friday because high school football, of course, week number two tonight. Great segment, last segment with Bill Clark, who's going to have a great call tonight of Central Catholic and St. Francis from New York, not Toledo, St. Francis. But, of course, the college football season is off and running as well. And I got to tell you, we got off to a pretty good start for a quarterback by the name of Lamar Jackson yesterday. Jim and I were talking about this yesterday. I got a lot of different things to promote here, so bear with me as I bring in our guest. But coming up on Tuesday, the 6th, we are going to be having a tremendous program. It's a college football preview show that's going to kind of coincide with the unveiling of the I-75 rivalry bobblehead. That bobblehead kickoff event is going to be at the Kroger in Perrysburg, all right? Mark Beyer is going to be on hand. Mike Miller is going to be there for drive time from 5 until 6. And Mark Beyer and I, the longtime voice of the Toledo Rockets, recently retired, of course, at least from that aspect of his work. He's still doing great work with us here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But Mark is going to be at the Kroger, and he's going to co-host what we are going to have as a college football preview show. Now, we previewed already individually Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, and Toledo and Bowling Green. What we have not yet done is spend any time talking about Sparty, 12th ranked in the preseason by the AP, in a similar place, I think, by the coaches poll and by Sports Illustrated. So we're going to include them as part of the college football preview show on Tuesday at the Kroger in Perrysburg. And so we're looking forward to that. But we want to have a little individual time for Sparty right now as they get set to kick off their season. I didn't even really realize they were starting on a Friday night. It just is so unusual to do that, but that's where they are. They host Furman, game number one tonight, and joining us now with a little preview, Kyle Austin of MLive.com, who covers the Michigan State Spartans for that outstanding online publication. Kyle, how are you this afternoon?
Good, how are you?
We're good. Both of us. Jim Cushlin is here as well. We're glad to have you to talk a little Big Ten football, talk a little Sparty. Hey, you know, it's kind of fun, you know, well, not for Michigan fans, I suppose, especially the way the game between Michigan and Michigan State ended last week, but you know, we kind of tend to still look at Michigan State as little brother. You know, at least here in Toledo, you know, we're kind of closer and we follow Michigan and Ohio State a little bit more closely. But it looks like Michigan State is doing everything they can to say, you know what, there is a brother here. There is a little brother here, but it's not in East Lansing. It is in Ann Arbor. And, oh, by the way, those who stay are already champions here in East Lansing. So some digs being taken even before the season gets underway by at least some in Michigan State Green pointed at the Maize and Blue Boys in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, I think Michigan State is kind of exercising the right to talk a little trash that it's earned by winning consistently, you know, over the last 7-8 years under Mark D'Antonio, and kind of reversing, you know, reversing that series history. And I think they're having a little fun with it. We've had some Michigan State fans complain that, you know, if Michigan would have done that, you know, over the last 7 or 8 years, that would have driven us crazy. And now here it is, Michigan State winning, and Michigan State's doing it right back. So, I mean, you guys know down there, that's how this rivalry is. You know, whoever's on top is going to let the other team know that they're on top. And the other one's probably going to get a little annoyed until they can do it. But, and both teams looking great this year. It's nice to have that. For me, it's nice to have that rivalry be competitive again and have it really be worth something, because really, last couple of years, I mean, frankly, Michigan's been down there. Really, to me, hasn't been a whole lot on the line that game besides bragging rights. And you look into going this year, there could be a heck of a lot on the line when those teams meet.
Yeah, we've been saying the same thing about Ohio State. It's just, you know, that's a traditional rivalry. We used to be maybe the greatest rivalry in college football, depending on what part of the country you're in. Alabama, Auburn folks might disagree with that and some others. But it hasn't been, you know, it's been very one-sided, and Michigan is looking to bring that back now, obviously. But you know what? Jim Harbaugh said, you know, directly when asked about that that little snarky, those who stay are already champions, he said it's true. You know, they are champions. They've won Big Tens. They've owned us in recent years, owned Michigan in recent years, and they're the ones that have to try to turn that around. So does Michigan State come into a season, you know, with Mark D'Antonio having these guys believing we are the big brother, and not just in that rivalry, but we are the elite. We have every bit as much of a right to claim the Big Ten as Ohio State does or anybody else does. I mean, is that program at that level now where they feel like every year we should be considered, you know, at least contenders for the college football playoff and potentially a national championship type club?
I think that within the program and within Michigan State's football building, they certainly feel that way, because there are guys in there that have won two Big Ten titles, the veterans on the team. Mm-hmm. They're the only team that's beaten Ohio State, since Urban Meyer's been there at least, and they've done it twice. So I certainly think that they feel like they have as much claim, to that as anybody else does. But at the same time, there still is that undercurrent of people are overlooking us. At Michigan State, which has kind of always been there. And I think it served as a useful tool for Mark D'Antonio to be able to say to his team, hey, nobody thinks you can win this. You know, everyone's talking about Michigan. Everyone's talking about Ohio State. No one thinks you're going to do this. And that's something they've done quite a bit. And, you know, I think that's faded a little bit with how much success that they've had. But you look at it again this year, you know, Michigan State's the reigning Big Ten champion. They're going to the playoff. They went to the playoff last year, and here they are pretty much unanimously picked third in their division behind Ohio State and Michigan again. Now, I happen to think there are good reasons for picking them. I picked the same thing, but it just kind of keeps playing into that Michigan State narrative and that Michigan State motivation that, hey, you know, we can win as much as we want, and people still won't think we can do it. So let's go do it again.
Well, quoting you in your piece today and previewing tonight's matchup against Furman, you know, you're talking about having to replace the winningest quarterback in school history, two All-Americans on the offensive line, the best receiver in the Big Ten, and 10 more starters. So, yeah, guess what? you might not be picked to repeat as a conference champion. You might have to prove some things. You might have to develop some chemistry with some first-time starters early in this season before you really kind of find out what you're made of. And I guess that's reasonable. So let's talk about how they go about doing that, especially dealing, trying to replace, Connor Cook, who is just such a tremendously successful quarterback, despite a lot of the, you know, sniping and snarking about, is he a leader and he wasn't a captain and all of that stuff. Boy, all he did was win.
Oh, yeah. And when he stepped out on the field, that's what he did. I mean, he looked like an NFL quarterback out there to me with some of the throws that he could make. Moving on from him, after 3 years, looking to an Ohio guy down there, Tyler O'Connor, from down there in Lima. He's a longtime program guy. I've been here 4 years, spent the last 3 years backing up Connor Cook. He's a guy that's really waited his turn a while. But the benefit with that, obviously, is he knows his offense. He knows the receivers very well. He's not a true freshman or redshirt freshman that's learning everything while he's getting thrown into there like you might see with other quarterback transitions. This is a guy that Michigan State has a lot of faith in, because they've seen him on the practice field for 4 years. Maybe we haven't seen him out on the game field, except for limited times, obviously most notably at Ohio State last year. But he's a guy that they have a lot of confidence in. I think they feel like for a new quarterback that he's going to be able to keep things pretty steady. They're hoping he doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. Obviously, it'd be a lot to expect him to be able to have the arm that kind of Cook had and to make some of the throws and to make some of those decisions. But at the same time, I think they think that he can be a little mobile, might be able to do some more play action, maybe some more design quarterback runs, and he can kind of bring a different dimension. So, obviously it's big shoes to fill. Tyler knows that. But I think he feels confident, and it's something he's waited for a long time. I think he's very, very excited for it.
We are talking to Michigan State football, getting a little preview of the Spartan season, and also a little bit of game one, which is tonight at home against Furman. Bob France along with Jim Cushland here. Cush, go ahead.
And you know, before we get to more of the Furman part of it, Kyle, this is obviously, as we all know, also the year that the Big Ten goes to 9 conference games, which only means 3 out of conference. So for a team that's a defending Big Ten champion, despite the quarterback change with Connor Cook out, they're bringing back a lot of guys and still looking for some of that respect. They're also going to get some, because after tonight, the other two out-of-conference games are at Notre Dame next week, and then you got BYU in a couple weeks. After that, it's all Big Ten play. So, really, outside of tonight, a pretty decent, tough schedule for the Spartans this year.
Well, it's not only that, but if you look at their schedule, they actually have their bye week right after this. So they go Furman, and they have a week off, and then they go 11 straight games, which is Notre Dame, BYU, and then 9 Big Ten games all right in a row, starting with Wisconsin.
This is a previous...
And then, so it's something that I've never seen before, frankly, in a college football schedule, is playing 11 straight games, 9 of them in a conference. And, that's really going to test them, I think. Not only the caliber that you're playing, but just not having that bye week. You know, you got a key guy with a sprained ankle or with a bum shoulder or whatever it might be that could use that week of rest. He's not going to have it. And you go down towards the end of the year, you got Ohio State, the second to last team of the year. Then you go on the road at Penn State to finish the year. So I think that's going to be very, very difficult for them, and it's going to be a new challenge. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like an NFL schedule to me. It's like tonight, I mean, nothing against Furman. I look at tonight almost like an exhibition game. And then you get the week off, and then it's like regular season, just go right through it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's, you know, intentionally disrespectful of Furman. It is what it is when you're talking about a 1AA school or FBS or FCS, if you will. And that's expected. When you look at the replacement of some of these other guys that we talked about, it's one thing. You talked about Tyler O'Connor and how he's prepped for this. But when you talk about the holes on the offensive line, and Ohio State's dealing with the same thing. You know, they lost a lot of starters, obviously. But the guys they returned are key guys, particularly in the middle of their offense and defense, from their center to their quarterback to their middle linebacker and safety and so on. How tough will it be for Michigan State to replace these guys with top caliber guys who are going to develop quicker rather than later, so that you don't trip and stumble in the early going?
Yeah, I think the offensive line is the biggest challenge that they have, because I think Michigan State fans, and I don't want to say they took it for granted, but they certainly got used to having such a talented offensive line, having two All-Americans on there, and Jack Conklin, the left tackle, and Jack Allen, the center, those guys are three-year starters, and they were just so steady. You look at moments like the end of the Big Ten championship game last year against Iowa, when Michigan State goes on the 20-something play drive. I mean, that's the offensive line, just in the fourth quarter, just being able to dominate the guys across from them and help Michigan State close out games. And we saw that time and time again. Now, it's question marks. You know, those guys played so much. You got a sophomore at left tackle and a guy named David Beadle. He played sparingly last year, kind of in the rotation. Right tackle, you've got a junior college transfer named Miguel Machado, who's also played very sparingly. And those are huge question marks, especially when you're breaking a new quarterback. You want to make sure he got the protection he needs. You want to make sure your running game, I mean, Mark Antonio will always say he wants to establish the run first. Those are big question marks, what those guys can do. We've seen them do it in the past. I mean, when Jack Conklin, if you know his story at all, he couldn't even get a scholarship offer. He was a gray shirt. He showed up, the lowest rated guy in his recruiting class, started after a year and became an All-American, you know, top 15 NFL draft pick. So Michigan State has done this before, taking guys that we don't know much about, that they're a question mark in, and turn them into very, very good offensive linemen. Can they continue to do that? I guess that's what we're going to find out here, because there are, you know, new phrases, a lot of new question marks there.
Kyle Austin is our guest. He covers the Michigan State Spartans for MLive.com. What about the defensive line? Malik McDowell is there, and I know we talk about him a lot, and you have, but three new starters around him as well. And how big of a challenge will that be compared to the challenge you just described on the offensive line?
I don't think it's quite as big. I think they have some more guys with experience in there. They actually lost eight guys from the defensive line. They lost three guys to graduation and five more through attrition. So it's kind of been a whole turnover there. But they got a guy named Demetrius Cooper, who's kind of Shalique Calhoun's understudy for the last couple of years, a guy that got a decent amount of playing time. So I think he's ready to be a starter. They got a fifth-year guy named Evan Jones on the other side who's played a fair amount. So there's a little bit more experience there. They also brought in two graduate transfers, including Kevin Williams. He was at Nebraska. So you got more guys with experience. There's certainly some uncertainty whenever you're replacing three starters on your defensive line. But given the fact that, A, you have Malik McDowell, probably the best interior defensive lineman in the country, and then some guys with some experience, maybe not the starts, but with some experience there, I think they're feeling a little bit better about that group.
Can you size up the Big Ten for us before you're done here, Kyle? And starting with Michigan, big brother, little brother, owned them for years, and yet that stigma is still there. Jim Harbaugh owned the offseason. I don't think anybody would deny that. He owned the offseason. He got so much attention for his club. Whether it'll pay off in recruiting next year and the year after, time will tell. Maybe it paid off already this year. He got a pretty good recruiting class by almost all accounts, but owning the offseason and bringing all of that to fruition in the season, two different things. Are they ready to be a Big Ten championship caliber team, or do you think Michigan is ripe for a fall after all of the buildup and all of the hype? Do you think they're overrated?
I'm not sure I'd say they're ripe for a fall. I'm certainly not picking them to win the Big Ten this year. And to me, a lot of that has to do with the schedule. I don't see their road going to East Lansing and to Columbus. I don't see that as conducive to a team like that, winning a Big Ten title. I think they're going to be better this year. I certainly look at the beginning of their schedule. I think they're going to start out 6-0. I don't see a whole lot of huge hurdles for them in the beginning. So I think this hype train is going to keep going for them. By the time that Michigan State game comes around, I mean, they could be, depending on what happens around them, they could be number two, number one, you know, if Alabama loses, frankly, because I think that their schedule sets up like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the Michigan State game is going to be the biggest one that we've seen in quite a while when they play in East Lansing. But
October,
you know,
29th, is it, I believe?
I believe so, yeah, late October. Okay. But, you know, I'm not sure. You know, I didn't see them win the big games last year. Obviously, you say what you want to about the end of the Michigan State game. They were obviously right there at the end, but I'm not sure I'm ready to see them take that next jump yet and win these huge games on the road. And So I still have Michigan State winning that, but I have Ohio State winning Big Ten, honestly, because I know how much they've lost, and I know the guys they've had to replace, but they've got more talent in Columbus than anywhere in the Big Ten, and Urban Meyer and his staff have shown that they can develop these guys quickly. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them drop one of their early games, you know, whether it's Oklahoma or whatever it is. But I think once their schedule also sets up to where they're playing their key games right at the end. So, you know, you think about it, this season, like 14, where they started off a little shaky, their new guys found their footing, and they just seem to constantly get better and then roll through the end of the season. I could see something like that again happening where they look like a totally different team once they hit Michigan State and once they hit the Michigan game at the end of the year than they did at the beginning. So they're my pick. I think it's a clear three in the Big Ten East. I'm not sure I see anybody in the Big Ten West being able to challenge those. I think it's a clear top three. None of those three would shock me to win, but I still have an Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan kind of in that hierarchy.
All right. I think that's pretty much what a lot of people are thinking, I don't want to say the word overrated because it's disrespectful, and what Harbaugh is doing there is extraordinarily, tremendous thus far. But I think there is still a year away. I really do. And I think all of the hype and all of the, you know, hey, they might be number one and all this sort of thing. They might make a playoff run. I don't think they're there yet, at least until they prove they can win the big games, as you say, against Sparty and against Ohio State. So I do. I think it's Ohio State's division and conference, and I think Michigan and Michigan State are going to be right there, but I think I'd probably still give the edge to Sparty. Little brothers no more, at least for one more year, and we'll see where it goes from there. Hey, Kyle, great stuff. We appreciate the analysis. Thanks for filling in some of the gaps for us about who's going to be replacing some lost starters and stars, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again throughout the season. Sound good?
Great. Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much. There's Kyle Austin with a preview for you, or for us anyway, for all of us, as we try to give you each and every college team around here that you care about. We have done individual previews of three Big Ten schools now, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, certainly Notre Dame, and, of course, our two MAC powerhouses, we hope to be anyway, Toledo, which kicks off tonight against Arkansas State, and Bowling Green, who, of course, is in the horseshoe tomorrow in Columbus. So college football fix is here. And you know what? The NFL season is just a week away as well. And if you are jonesing for that the way we are, you probably feel like you could put on a helmet right now. Well, I can't give you a helmet, but I can give you an owner's clipboard, if you will. How'd you like to own your own team? With FanDuel, because fantasy football is back. FanDuel is fantasy football for everyday fans, all right? With new contests starting every week, it means no busted seasons because of an early season loss or an injury to one of your top draft picks. You just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. You pick a new team every week if you want. And brand new this year, even more contest variety. You can try beginner contests. These are great because if you're a new player and you're hesitant to get into a battle against a seasoned fantasy veteran, well, this is the contest for you, rookie against rookie. Or you can settle a score with a friend and go head-to-head. Or a 50-50 contest where the top half wins cash, bottom half doesn't. Or play in larger tournaments for even more excitement. You can play for as little as a buck. There are choices for every budget at FanDuel. Get all that fantasy football has to offer with FanDuel. Be sports rich. Try FanDuel now and get up to $50 in free entries. New users who deposit will get 5 free entries to NFL 50-50 beginner contest, valued at up to $50. You'll get 1 free entry a week for 5 weeks, the value of your free entry based, of course, on your deposited amount. Go to FanDuel.com right now. Click on the Join Now button, and then use my promo code. Type in FRANTZ France. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, that's who we are, that's what we are, that's where we are. Did you see the debut last night, Jim? I talked about it just kind of in passing before we had Kyle on. Lamar Jackson of Louisville last night against Charlotte.
I did catch a few glimpses. I did say I flipped around between some of those games just for the hell of it last night.
Eight first-half touchdowns by Lamar Jackson. That is incredible. That is something that, quite frankly, you know, he could have just set the record, I would imagine, had he wanted to in the second half, that nobody would ever touch. I mean, you just, when things are going that way, and your opponent is that outmatched, it could have been 10, 12 touchdowns, the kind of thing that nobody could ever even.
Yeah, and despite the name of their opponent, Charlotte, not being familiar, that's actually a Division I A school in Conference USA nowadays.
Yeah.
Despite the score.
Yeah, he had 8 touchdowns, 6 passing, 2 running in a single half. He's just a tremendously ultra-talented quarterback. I won't call him a dual threat because I don't want Deshaun Watson to get mad at me. but he is. I mean, right? I mean, he had more. Listen, Jackson had more passing yards, 286, and rushing yards, 119, than Charlotte had total yards, 105. That's just amazing. They scored on 8 of their first 9 half. Eight of their first 9 first half drives, and they had 7 punts. Did the 49ers, Charlotte, a fumble and a turnover on downs. The Cardinals had 8 touchdowns. Charlotte had 4 first downs. So it was one of those clearly outmatched things. But when you see 8 touchdowns and a half, the only time you usually see that, Jim, is when? What sport?
Eight touchdowns and a half.
And a half.
In
that's
half?
An arena thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's arena football. That's all that is. You don't see it in legitimate football, full 100-yard field football. It just doesn't.
And not even when powerhouses play 1AA schools and the scores get up to 70-14 like this one yesterday. It's usually not 8 in the first half.
No, that was crazy. By the way, I just want to throw this out, too, because we're kind of in a free-for-all mode right now in the final 20 minutes of the show. Anything you want to talk about, by the way, if you want to get in on Colin Kaepernick or Cam Newton's comments about Kaepernick or about just, the race in this country and more, very, very much would like to have you call 866-240-1065 right now. There's no waiting at the moment. We'll get you on the radio. But, Jim, we were talking to Kyle Austin about replacing Connor Cook and what a tremendously successful quarterback he was at Michigan State. We all know that his fall was one of the more interesting developments in the draft this past April. Right.
Yeah.
He was expected to go somewhere in the first 3 rounds, probably not any lower than the 2nd round. Ended up going in the 4th round to the Raiders, where he's not going to play because they already have their quarterback of the future, Derek Carr, and he's just going to be kind of learning the ropes and, maybe an insurance policy if Carr goes down. Yeah, bad night last night in the 4th preseason game for Connor Cook, the former Michigan State Spartan. Things got ugly. Those who watched when the 4th quarter began saw a score that looked like a mid-level Premier League contest in an NFL game. And I'm stealing some lines from a story about this. It was 5-3. Then in the 4th quarter, 36 points went up, 20 of them by Seattle. And the problem for that is Connor Cook was responsible for a lot of that mess. The Raiders didn't get past midfield on offense in the first half, although Connor Cook showed some good signs in the second half. He blew up in the 4th quarter, just exploded, and I'm reading all kinds of Raiders coverage here, and to say that they're using some foul words, as Raider fans have been known to do, for Connor Cook is an understatement. I don't know what the future holds for Connor Cook. I don't know what his NFL prospects are. There might be a reason why he dropped as far as he did, and it might be more than just the, hey, he's not a real leader. His teammates didn't even vote him captain his senior year as the quarterback. A 3-year starter isn't even a captain. It might just be that, he's one of these guys who was good at the college level but might not have what it takes at the pro level.
Sure, and we've seen some of those over the course of years. Matt Leinart, in recent memory, is always a wonderful example to me. He was very solid with those USC teams, but average, and that's being the most generous on the NFL football field, and never really made it for himself. And Connor Cook sadly might be in one of those kind of modes. It's probably part of the reason originally he fell off in the draft the way he did. So
and then, by the way, it's way, I mean, this, he's had 4 preseason games in his rookie year, so I'm not trying to bag on the Ohio kid from Walsh Jesuit. He's from Hinckley Township.
Sure.
And nobody's saying his career's over and he's going to go the way of Matt Leinart and never pan out. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying it was very weird the way he slid. And right now they just don't seem to have a whole lot of patience for him, at least the fans out there, based on some of the descriptions of what happened yesterday.
And speaking of yesterday and other things happening, keeping it on the fun thing, if it wasn't for the fact that the team in this case still ended up winning, I would have said that just 8 touchdowns and you're still not the biggest story on a Thursday to open college football. because did you see number 9 Tennessee nearly blow it
again
against App State, who, by the way, just like I'll point out, sorry, Michigan fans, App State is now actually an FBS 1A team. They're in the Sun Belt. They're not 1AA anymore, just for the record. But if they don't miss that extra point in the second quarter, we're talking about one of the conversations we're having today is there once again how useless the preseason polls are. Who's ranking Tennessee number nine?
Yeah. Now, where do they end up after this weekend's football?
I think they'll end up 15. I think they'll end up around 15, 16.
16, Jim. Wait, 15?
I think they should drop five or six spots by winning in overtime at home against a team they were a three touchdown favorite.
As I question you, I'm saying they should fall to the top 25.
Oh, altogether?
A top 25 team doesn't need overtime.
I certainly wouldn't argue it if they did.
A top 25 team doesn't need overtime to beat App State. I'm sorry, at home. No disrespecting to App State, although I am disrespecting Appalachian State, and I realize that. You know, you always have to say no disrespect, but I'm really not trying to bag on their kids. They got up for a game, and they beat a powerhouse team, supposedly a powerhouse team from certainly a powerhouse conference. They didn't beat them, but
they're the favorites right now. That's part of the reason for their ranking. Those are the supposed favorites to face an Alabama or somebody in the SEC title game.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'll tell you what. You know, this is one of those stories that brings me back each and every year, and I don't want to sound like I'm repeating an old show from last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. And we'll do this probably a couple more times between now and, say, week 4 or 5 of the regular season.
Oh, totally.
And we're going to say, why the hell did they start ranking them before everybody played 3 or 4 or 5 games?
At least turn the calendar to October. I've never understood what's so hard about that.
Right.
That's one of the few things the BCS had right. They didn't release their first rankings until, what was it, mid-October?
Mid-October, yes. And even still now with the BCS, the College Football Playoff rankings. The CFP rankings don't come out until what? I want to say mid to late October now.
Yeah, it's mid to late October.
So, to me, considering the fact that the polls play a part, you know, a role in what eventually become the final college football rankings, you know, that the committee puts together, I think it would only be responsible to make sure those polls are accurate and not that one team started out unranked and has to climb to get up there to get consideration by a committee before, you know, they finally start voting on it.
Yep.
And they deserve much better than that. And a team that started out high has to have a bunch of near miss wins, you know, that they just clearly don't look as good as they've been ranked, but they were ranked there. So they stay there or they stay up in the upper echelon of the rankings like you. You know, said maybe down to 15 from 9. Well, to me, screw that. You don't deserve to be just 6 spots lower. You've proven you're not one of the top 15 teams in the country with that performance, at least now. We'll reevaluate you in 4 weeks. Flip the calendar to October, like you said, and then we'll look. And I think that's where the first ranking should come out.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with that. That's when they should. It would make them more sense. You'd have actual body work. Because remember, as we all know, half of the preseason polls, these first polls that come out, are somehow based on what you did last year, which more than even the pro leagues is useless because of graduations or,
exactly,
or players leaving for the draft. And
turnover means so much. I mean, yep. I mean, look, let's be honest. Ohio State is a prime example of this. Ohio State was a great team last year. Ohio State lost a ton of talent. They return only a handful of starters. Now, they are key starters, indeed.
Yes.
They still have, you know, JT Barrett, who was 2 years ago a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Right.
And all of that sort of thing. But in truth, should they be top 5 or 6 or 7? And, you know, given the fact that they've got to replace a whole bunch of guys with new first-time starters, probably not. Does that mean they aren't the 5th, 5th, or 6th best team in the country? I don't know. Let's watch them play 4 weeks. Let's watch them play September. Then in the first Monday of October, we'll come out with our first ranking, and then we'll have an idea of how well did Ohio State replace those guys? How well did Michigan State handle the turnover on the offensive and defensive lines? How well did Michigan handle the loss of Rudock and you know, an entire off-season-long quarterback battle between 3 guys? Did they pick the right guy? Let's find out 4 weeks in, not before they even pick the quarter.
Exactly.
Hey, how did Michigan, and I'm not bagging on Michigan. Everybody knows that. I want to see a great Big Ten fight between Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State. And I want to see Jim Harbaugh do well. I've been rooting for him to come back and do his thing. So I'm not bagging on Michigan. But truthfully, how did any of the coaches who voted in the coaches poll, how did anybody at Sports Illustrated, who put the SI Top 25 out before the season, and how did anybody in the AP, the Associated Press voters, how did any of them vote for Michigan to be a top 10 team when Michigan, at the time they had been voted as such, did not know who their quarterback was going to be?
Right.
It's only the most important position on the field. It's only the most difficult position to fill when you lose a good one.
And as far as I know, unless there's been a fast one in the last couple of hours from Harbaugh, they still haven't announced who it's going to be, and we're, what, 30 hours away from kickoff?
Yeah, and of course, we, since we had our Michigan guest on yesterday, Nick Baumgartner, who kind of told us it's going to be Spate. That's what he believes.
Right.
You know, Wilson Spate, the sophomore, and that's fine. But the point is, A, the guys who voted in the coaches poll did not know that. And I say guys because it's not always coaches. Sometimes it's SIDs and ADs and others for each of these schools.
A lot more times than you'd think, actually.
Yeah, because, you know, coaches don't have time for that. They don't have time to be watching game film of everybody else in the country to see who the top 25 teams are. They got to coach their own team.
Right.
They got to watch their opponent. And that's it. But anyway, the AP people, the SI people, et cetera. They didn't know if it was Wilson Spate or if it was John O'Korn or if it was Shane Morris. And now that even if they did, let's say Jim Harbaugh announced it yesterday, even if they did, how do they know how good they're going to be under Wilson Spate? He's never started a college game in his life. It's a brand new, it's an unopened book. Jim, I can't believe I just stumbled on it. This is like reviewing a New York Times book reviewer reviewing a book that he hasn't read. Or maybe he looked at the jacket cover.
Right.
You know what I mean? You read the synopsis on the back.
It's a good analogy.
Maybe you read the acknowledgments inside, and maybe you read the inside jacket cover to get the plot synopsis and say, all right, here's what I got. This is what I'm giving this book. Wait a minute. Don't you need to read the freaking story? Don't you need to see the chapter development, the character development, the twists and the turns and the ins and the outs? You don't need to see all that, huh? You can just judge this book by its cover. And if, by the way, Jim, and to really kind of, I'm going to mix metaphors here. In fact, let me get away from the book metaphor and get to the movie metaphor. And it would be judging a movie for the Academy Awards based on the trailer. You see the trailer, 2.5 minutes of heart-stopping action in a world.
Mr. Big Voice that we totally envy.
Right. That's right. You see the trailer. And you decide whether or not it's a great movie based on the trailer alone, because this is a preview of the movie. And then it's not just like your decision here gets thrown away. It is considered when the Academy awards Oscar nominations. This movie was nominated for an Oscar when nobody had seen it because the previews looked really good. That's what they just did with Michigan. That's what they just did with Ohio State, too, to be quite frank, with all the new starters.
And apparently Tennessee.
And Tennessee. They're judging the content and the quality of the overall production based on the preview, based on the trailer. That's what they're doing. Man, that's a great analogy, Bob. Well done, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you. Can I get a round of applause, please, from the gallery that hates Jim Cushman so much? Yes. John in Toledo, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for being patient there, John, while we rambled on. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
That's all right. I agree with you. Tennessee will be a non-factor at the end of the year.
And they won't be in the top 25. I really don't think they will be, probably in about a month.
I was stunned that they were number 9,
put it that way. Me too.
Colin Kaepernick thing. I'm in awe. I mean, my wife is not a sports fan in particular. But when she heard that he did not stand up for the national anthem, that was a shot at our country. And, you know, for the country who gives you $19 million, the land of the free, and you earn your spots playing a game, and you make $19 million a year, we're asking you to stand up for our national anthem. Even in hockey, when you go to Canada, you stand up for their national anthem. It's a respect thing. And I lost a lot of respect for him. I'm not saying he was on top of my charts or anything, but I lost a lot of respect for him because this is not the way to do it. If you want to publicize this as, a personal factor, not something that you have to put yourself in the forefront to actually make it a bigger issue than what it should have been. I understand you don't have to stand up for it, but please, do it in a different fashion. Don't do it in the fashion that you're in front of millions of people and you make this big stir about it. You should go basically to your local TV station. Go and tell them, hey, this is how I feel about how black people are being oppressed in the United States. It's not a thing of going out to a football game that you're playing, that you're making $19 million a year, and you don't stand up for our national anthem. That is a total disrespect for our country.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And the other thing that he's doing is he is completely misallocating his time. And what I mean by that is because he's doing it on the football field, who's asking him questions about it? Football writers. He's making football writers who come into the locker room after games and do press conference interviews with him, he's making them have to write about all of his, which is outside of their realm of expertise, but all of his opinions, right, wrong, or upside down, and I know the facts, and they're wrong. But aside from that, they're making football writers write the stories here. You're 100% right. If this guy wanted to make a statement about what he thinks is going on, all he needs to do is make a phone call and say, I'm a quarterback in the NFL, and I would like to go on Nightline. Or I would like
to go on NBC Sunday night
with whoever took over, Lester Holt. They would put him on in a second. Go to a news outlet and have these conversations with people who actually can make change. This crap about sitting on the football field and then putting the onus on sports reporters to try to report what's going on and the truth about things is just, it's a failure from the word go. And I agree with you, and I agree with Boomer Esiason. There's a time and a place for that sort of thing. The football field is not that place. And before games and then in post-game press conferences, those are not the times.
That is exactly right. And like I said, when the time comes that he has to, I mean, we haven't heard about the oppression thing yet. We haven't heard him sit down, like you said, outside of a sports writer and explain what he thinks his personal problem is with it. If he does that, okay, I respect that. But again, doing it on this football field in front of this type of audience.
Hey, John, especially if he did it in a forum where somebody was able to counter what he is saying with some equal and opposite information. Because that's the problem here. I know for a fact that he does not have any factual statistical information to back up his assertions. And I know there anything he would say is very easily refuted. He is going on some of the hyperbole advanced by activist groups like the ones that his girlfriend, and that's where this started, that his girlfriend is involved in. And he's suddenly trying to make it his own. And I promise you, if he went to somebody and actually said, let's debate and discuss based on factual information, he would stop this nonsense and start standing for the anthem very quickly.
Exactly.
Man, I got to run, my friend. I apologize for cutting you off, but I'm out of time here. The music is a-playing, and that means I've only got 1 minute left to tell you again about the Buckeye Store and More. Get to the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania. Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. This is the College and Pro Superstore. Whether you want Ohio State gear, Michigan gear, Notre Dame, Michigan State, Toledo, Bowling Green, or the Detroit Tigers, it's all there. And guess what else? 10% store-wide savings right now on hundreds of new Nike products in stock. And 50 to 75% off a select doorbuster items every day at the Buckeye Store and More. Get out there. It's right there in Starlight Plaza between Ralphie's and Dave's and in front of Prometica. Look for Big Brutus Buckeye on the roof. You cannot miss it. The Buckeye Store and More. Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania. The Buckeye Store and More, your college and pro superstore. Hey, thanks for a great conversation today and all week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'll talk to you again live on Tuesday, as we'll have game action for you on Monday, Labor Day. Have a great weekend. Be well.